Amen. Amen. It's good to see everybody here this Sunday afternoon. Oh, thanks for smiling back. It makes me feel appreciated. As we are heading into the fall time, you know, you can tell the fall is coming because, you know, Labor Day is here. People are going back to school. You know, I think we mentioned last week, teachers are going back to school. Things are happening. And as we get ready for this fall, we wanted to take some time today to just be able to share about, you know, what is the vision and mission that we are here for together as a church. And I don't know if you know, many businesses, most that I know of, have some sort of like mission statement, like what this organization is about. And usually that mission statement just shares a little bit about what they're trying to do, what they're focused on, what their goals are. And so actually I wanted to have like an interactive like quiz time. And I'm going to put up a mission statement of a company, and you're going to try to guess what company it is, right? Some of them are pretty easy. There's like one or two that's a little hard, but we'll do the first one, and as we walk through it, I think you'll get the hang of it. So the first one here, the first mission statement is to organize the world's information and to make it universally accessible and useful. So this is a company. What company is this? It's like Google. Boom. Board says... Oh, answer is Google, right? Okay, so this is, hopefully that makes sense. That's Google's mission. They're out to organize the world's information and make it useful for people, okay? Second one, to be Earth's most customer-centric company where people can find and discover anything they want to buy online. Like if you're on Mars, it don't count. Do? All right, it's Amazon. Thank you for helping build that suspense. Okay, all right, those two were easy. Okay, easy. This one, this one's not bad either. To inspire and nurture the human spirit, one person, one cup, and one neighborhood at a time. All right, here's some caffeine addicts in the back. Okay, here we go. Starbucks, right? Just three more here. To give people the power to build community and bring the world closer together. I didn't even finish reading. Oh, Lord. It's okay, it's okay, it's okay, guys. Everyone. I see. Yeah, nobody cheat. Nobody look at Melania's computer, all right? But yeah, this is Facebook's last two. Here we go. Oop. Our mission is to reconnect people through transportation and bring communities together. Uber or Lyft? Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Lyft. Lyft. And then the last one here, to spread ideas. Twitter, iPhone, to spread ideas. I think y'all know this. Ready? 3, 2, 1. TED Talks. That's the only thing they do. They exist to spread ideas, right? So as you think about these mission statements, I think for, you know, when you're looking at it, some of them match pretty well, right? Like when the mission statement goes up, it's pretty obvious what it is. Other ones, it's like, I'm not sure if they match it so well. But for us, we as a church also have a mission statement. I think many of us are familiar with it, but we wanted to talk about it today. And there's an important caveat. These are like all business mission statements. Hopefully you know and believe HMCC is not a business. We're not in this as a business, but we are a local church, and we're out for a purpose. We're here for a reason. And so what is the mission statement that binds us together as a group? And so for us as HMCC, our mission statement is to transform lost people into Christ's disciples who will then transform the world. For us, this is what drives us. This is what we're about. This is what we hope to accomplish. And today we're going to look into the Word to see an example of what this might look like and to help us understand why it is that this is the mission that we believe God has called HMCC, God has called us to be a part of. And so we're going to look into Luke chapter 19 today, Luke chapter 19, verse 1 to 10. And as we do that, we're going to see that transformation happens as we meet Jesus. As always, you're welcome to follow along up here on your phone, on an actual Bible, but I'll be reading for us Luke chapter 19, verse 1 to 10. And it says this, "He entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on the account of the crowds, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all grumbled, He has gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner." And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." The four things that we have to know about Zacchaeus as we go into this passage. First thing that we have to know is that he was a chief tax collector. I know we've talked about it before, but in case you're not familiar, back in the day, nobody liked tax collectors, right? Nobody likes tax collectors today, right? We're far away from April tax day, but no one likes it when the tax people come or if IRS comes to audit you. Back in the day, no different. People didn't like tax collectors, but there were a couple reasons why no one liked tax collectors. See, tax collectors back in the day, especially in this context, they were Jewish people who had sided with the Roman government to collect money from their own Jewish people. And so these were the things that happened. When they were tax collectors, most often they took more money than they were supposed to take. So you know how like you work at your job really hard and then you pay like, sorry, I'm not too personal, like 20% taxes, 30%, whatever. You pay taxes on it, right? And it already hurts that you're working and then you have to pay taxes on it. But imagine on top of the taxes you're supposed to pay, the guy who comes, he comes and collects 20% more just because he can, right? And so the tax collectors would use their position and authority to take more money than they were supposed to for these taxes. So obviously, people wouldn't like these people, right? They're not only taking your money in the first place, but they're going to use their authority above that and then unjustly take, kind of really steal your money. And on top of that, not only did they come to do this, but these were your own people. Right, the Roman government is responsible for collecting taxes. And so maybe if the government had come and it's someone you don't even know, it's someone that's not even part of your group, comes and takes it, maybe you would hate them, but I think it hurts more when it's people that are supposed to be on your side. Right? These are fellow Jewish people that are ripping off other Jewish people. You know, imagine it, you know, when someone does something wrong to you, it hurts, but when it's your friend that does it to you, it hurts even more. Right? And in the same way, people hated these tax collectors because not only were they unjustly taking things that don't belong to them, not only were they taking advantage of the relationship and the power that they had, but they were also supposed, they were Jewish people. They should have been on the Jewish people's side, but they sided with the Roman government instead and betrayed those people. And so Zacchaeus is a tax collector. Not only that, Zacchaeus is a chief tax collector. What does that mean? That means he either collected taxes better than other people, or longer than other people, or had more connections to get him moved up to be a chief tax collector. Probably all the more reason you would not like someone like Zacchaeus. And so not only was he a chief tax collector, but we also see that he was rich. He had got rich doing these things. And so he may not have had a lot of friends, because he burned all those bridges when he took advantage of them and took their stuff, took their money as a tax collector. But he was rich. And so he had amassed some money for himself. And it's interesting that they include this. And, you know, if you were reading the Bible, you would maybe think about one chapter before, we also met someone who was rich. Like Jesus is meeting Zacchaeus here now who's rich. And one chapter earlier, he met a rich young ruler. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that story, but in that story of the rich young ruler, Jesus tells that rich young ruler to go sell his stuff so that he can have eternal life and so he can follow Jesus, but the rich young ruler cannot. And so as you're thinking about Zacchaeus and how rich he is, not only would you be reminded that he took advantage of people to get this wealth, but it would also make you think of the rich young ruler who had failed Jesus' test earlier. But Zacchaeus has one redeeming quality in the story so far, and that is in that verse 3, it says that he wanted to know who Jesus was. And so here was this person, he had some authority, he had some power, he had some money, but we do see in this passage, he wanted to know who Jesus was. That's why he came out to the street to see what Jesus was up to, who this was that was passing by. And the last thing we see is that he was small. He was small. And, you know, it's not a bad thing to be small. You know, God is sovereign in how he made everybody in your height advantage or whatever, you know. But for Zacchaeus, the reason that this is a problem is that his small stature prevents him from being able to see Jesus, right? So he goes out. You can imagine it's like a party or a concert, or even like sometimes you sit down in Sunday celebration and you sit down and then someone who's like 6'4" sits in front of you and you can't see anything, right? It's kind of like that. Like Zacchaeus is trying to see who Jesus is, but he's short and he literally cannot see who Jesus is. And so these are the four things that we have to see about Zacchaeus to understand what's going on here. But I think even as we think about this, there's some questions that come out for us. I think throughout the story, we want to be able to relate with Zacchaeus. And for Zacchaeus, he comes into the story and he's introduced that he is this tax collector, someone who's done bad things to people, broken relationships. I think for us, it's similar, right? As we come here this Sunday, we ourselves probably have done bad things. We also have broken relationships with people. And so in some ways, we might be able to identify with Zacchaeus. But I think a greater question for us today is, you know, Zacchaeus comes and he wants to know who Jesus is. That's his motivation. And I think that's the motivation I want to ask is, what is our motivation as we come here on Sunday? Right? Do we come wanting to know who Jesus is? Like, that's the redeeming quality that Zacchaeus has. And as we gather this afternoon, I have to ask, you know, why are you here? Like Zacchaeus, is there a desire to know who Jesus is? Or do we just come because it's routine? It's on the calendar? You know, we have bomb refreshments, so you know that's coming up later. You know, what is it that drives us to be here? And not only why are we here, but also, like Zacchaeus, what gets in the way of us knowing who Jesus is? For Zacchaeus, it was literally his height. He just could not see Jesus. But I think for us, we have things in our lives that make it hard for us to see who Jesus is. Like Zacchaeus, maybe it's our situation. You know, in Zacchaeus' situation, being short is not as bad, except for there's a lot of people blocking him, right? Maybe for us, some of us in our situation makes it hard for us to see who Jesus is. Maybe it's our financial situation, like things are not going very well. It makes it really hard to focus on trying to learn more about Jesus when our finances are not going well. Or maybe our relationships are not going well, like with our friends and our family, something's up. And so because our relationships are not going well, it makes it really hard to focus on finding out who Jesus is. Or maybe we're not like Zacchaeus. Maybe we're not short, right? But maybe we're insecure. Maybe we are greedy. Maybe we are proud. Maybe we're skeptical. You know, what is it that is, like Zacchaeus, something that is prohibiting us, blocking us from getting to know who Jesus is? I think those are the questions we have to wrestle with a little bit today. And I think one more thing to point out about Zacchaeus is that, you know, it's interesting that he's rich and it's interesting that he has these things because it's so easy to be put together on the outside and still be so lost on the inside. Right? Zacchaeus has a lot of money. And even though he's not liked by people, he has authority and power. And I think for us, maybe it's not in the same way, but we focus a lot on being put together on the outside while ignoring that on the inside, we have these questions and we have these concerns that we are not willing to address. And so those are the four things about Zacchaeus that you need to know. And then as he meets Jesus, there are three things that happen. Three things that happen as he meets Jesus. So in this story, Zacchaeus, he wants to see Jesus so bad that he climbs the sycamore tree. And sycamore trees, I mean, I don't know if you know what they look like, but some of them have really low limbs. So you can, like, it's, like, really slopey, so you can, like, walk on it. It's really low, so you can climb it. But Zacchaeus climbs this tree to see who Jesus is, and then three things happen as he encounters Jesus. And this is where we see the transformation start to take place. The first thing that happens as Zacchaeus sees Jesus and Jesus invites himself over to Zacchaeus' place, the first thing that we see is that Zacchaeus calls Jesus Lord. You see, up until this point, until this point where Jesus interacts with Zacchaeus, Zacchaeus has just been trying to find out who this Jesus guy is. Is he a healer? Is he a good teacher? Is he just a miracle worker? Is he some crazy dude who thinks he's God? You know, who is Jesus? And Zacchaeus is trying to find out who is Jesus. And when Jesus finally invites himself over to Zacchaeus' house, Zacchaeus' conclusion is that he must be Lord. And you see that changing in the story. Up until this point, it's just referred to as Jesus. And suddenly, Zacchaeus starts referring to him as Lord. He calls him Lord. And that word Lord, it means like master. It represents authority. Like, that's what you would call the decision maker, the head honcho. That's what you would call. You call him Lord. And I think in our day, like, examples of good authority are kind of scarce, right? And most of us have had such bad experiences with authority that we think authority in itself is probably bad. And the best examples of good authority I could think about is, like, maybe if you're in, like, the military and you're captain or lieutenant is a good captain who cares about his soldiers and the people under him, right? When you see war movies, there's usually at least like one good captain, right? One guy who cares about his soldiers and who, even though he gives commands, he cares about them. Or for some of us, you know, we've played high school sports or college sports and you have a coach, you know? I'm not talking about like a life coach or like a fitness coach or like a business skills coach. Because, you know, when those coaches give you, you know, when they talk to you, it's like suggestions. You know, oh, I think you should change the way you eat. Or, oh, I think you should think more positive thoughts. You know, in high school, when you had a coach, like, when they said stuff, it was not a suggestion, right? Like, you had to do what coach tells you to do, right? Whether that's practice, whether that's running, whether that's weightlifting. But I think some of us have had good coaches that even though they were harsh, even though we knew we had to obey them, they cared about us as people. Or another example I could think about was a good boss. They seem to be rare these days, but some of us have had good bosses, right? People, you have to listen to them. You have to do the work they tell you to do, but people who care about you, right? Those are some of the examples of good authority I could think about. And that's what Zacchaeus is thinking when he acknowledges Jesus as Lord. He's saying, Jesus, I view you as the way I would view my boss, as the way I would view my commander, someone who is an authority above me, who I have to listen to. He's the one who makes the calls. He's the one I obey, but someone who also is a good authority that cares about me. And so we see the first thing that changes is that Zacchaeus goes from wondering who Jesus is to calling him Lord. The second thing we see is that he declares his goods to the poor. You know, back in the day in the Jewish community or in this time, you know, it was considered really generous if you gave away like 20% of your wealth. Which, I mean, even today, that sounds really generous, right? Like, if you gave away 20% of your wealth to the poor, that's, like, a super generous, you know? But if you know, a lot of Jewish community is pretty pragmatic, and so they were like, 20% is super generous. Giving more than 20% is just not prudent. It's not wise, right? Well, if you're giving away more than 20% of your wealth, it's just probably not a good financial decision. That's kind of like the sentiment in the Jewish community at the time. And here we see Zacchaeus saying, I'm going to give away half of my goods to the poor. And I think it really would have stood in stark contrast to the rich ruler that's in chapter 18. Because in Jesus' encounter with the rich ruler in chapter 18, this is what happens. Jesus says to him, one thing you still lack, sell all that you have and distribute to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come, follow me. But when he, the rich young ruler, heard these things, he became very sad, for he was extremely rich. And so it would have been so shocking to the people who had been following Jesus around. They had just encountered this rich young ruler who was a good man. He did moral things. but he wasn't willing to give away his stuff to the poor. And here is this wretched, messed up tax collector Zacchaeus, and he is joyfully giving away half of his wealth to the poor. And this is where you see a little bit more of that transformation, because you start seeing this man had become rich by doing all these immoral things, taking advantage of people, taking their stuff. And here he is now willingly giving away his wealth to the poor. And we get another glimpse of the transformation that is happening in Zacchaeus' life. And the last thing we see is that he seeks to restore what is broken. In the second half of his statement, he says, if I have defrauded, if I had, you know, broken trust or taken advantage of or stolen from you in any way, I will repay it fourfold. Like if I took a dollar from you, I'm going to give you $4 back, right? If I took 10 chicken nuggets from you, I'm going to give you 40 chicken nuggets back, right? He said, I'm going to give it back fourfold. And it's not a random number when he says that, right? In the Jewish law, when you stole something, you were supposed to pay it back by adding 20% on top. So if I took a dollar from you, I'm supposed to give you $1.20 back. That's what it says in Numbers chapter 5. It says, speak to the people of Israel. When a man or woman commits any of the sins that the people commit by breaking faith with the Lord, and that person realizes his guilt, he shall confess his sin that he has committed, and he shall make full restitution with his wrong, adding a fifth to it and giving it to him to whom he did the wrong. So in the Jewish law, it was if you did wrong to someone and you took their stuff, you took their money, you were supposed to pay it back in full and then add a fifth or 20% on top. But Zacchaeus goes above and beyond that. He says, I know I'm supposed to only give 20% extra if I've messed with you, but I'm going to give you fourfold. And in Exodus 22, verse 1, it says this, if a man steals an ox or a sheep and kills it or sells it, he shall repay 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. And so Zacchaeus is saying, I'm going to go above and beyond the 20% I'm supposed to give. I'm going to give all the way up to 4 times of what I took from you, even though that's not what the law requires. And here we see that Zacchaeus is not just trying to right his wrongs by giving the money he took back, but he's trying to restore the relationships that he broke with the community. That's what these laws were in there for the first place, right? The original laws from the Old Testament were there so that not only would the wrong be paid for, but that the broken relationships that happened because of the things that went wrong, that those would be restored. And that's what Zacchaeus is saying. He's saying, I'm going to give these things back, and I'm going to try to restore these relationships that I've broken with my community by taking advantage of them. And so this is where we see this transformation taking place in Zacchaeus' life as he meets Jesus. And then moving forward, we see there's 2 things that Jesus says in response. I'm just going to read the verse for us again because it's been a while. In verse 9, it says this, Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. And the first thing that we see is that today salvation has come. And he's saying that today, for Zacchaeus, he is saved. And it says that today salvation has come, for he is also a son of Abraham. And that's an interesting phrase because, like, back in the day, what the Jewish people thought, I know many of us know this, is that they thought you were saved by being Jewish. Like, if you were Jewish, you were part of the covenant family, you got good standing with God, and that's what makes you saved, because you're Jewish, right? But here, Jesus is pointing to something that we see Paul talking about in Galatians 3. Paul says this in Galatians 3, know then that it is those of faith who are the sons of Abraham. And the scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, in you shall all the nations be blessed. So then those who are of faith are blessed along with Abraham, the man of faith. What Jesus is saying is that today salvation has come to Zacchaeus, not because he's Jewish, but because he has faith. That if you think you have salvation just because you're Jewish, you're mistaken. And actually, it's faith that makes you a true son of Abraham. You are a son of Abraham because you exhibit faith the way Abraham exhibited faith. And that salvation, what does that mean? What does it mean that salvation has come? For the people back then, they knew that because of the sins that they had done wrong against God, that there was wrath coming. There was a just punishment that was coming for the wrongs that they had done. For the sins that they had committed, like the stealing and the taking advantage of here, and for the relationships that they had broken, that there was wrath and punishment to come. The just wrath of God that was coming. And Jesus is saying, salvation has come. Salvation from this wrath of God has come because Zacchaeus displays faith. Faith believing that I am Lord, that Jesus is Lord. And not only does he say that today salvation has come, but he says that he came to seek and to save the lost. And I think you can't miss this here. The whole time in this story, it has been built upon the idea that Zacchaeus is trying to see who Jesus is. Right? All of this is happening is because this short dude can't see Jesus, and he's trying to see who Jesus is. But here in this statement, Jesus is saying that I came to seek and save the lost. That before Zacchaeus was thinking about seeking me, I was seeking him. That I came to seek this lost man, and to save him. And that this is why Jesus, the Son of God, left heaven and took on flesh and lived among people as a poor carpenter. That he came to seek and save the lost. And that he did this, I think we know, that he did this by living that perfect life and dying in Zacchaeus' place so that Zacchaeus might be forgiven for all the wrong things that he did and saved thereby from the wrath of God. And that we know that Jesus would rise again so that Zacchaeus could not only identify in Jesus' death, but in Jesus' life, and Zacchaeus would have new life. And for us, what happened to Zacchaeus in this story is what is available to us today. Right? That Jesus didn't just die for Zacchaeus or just die for the Jews or just die for the people he met in his 30-some years here, but Jesus died for all. That for any who would trust him, who would believe him, who would follow him as Lord, that we might be also saved and transformed like Zacchaeus. That Jesus came to seek and save the lost. And that's why the one thing for today is that our lives will be transformed as we see Jesus as Lord. And this is the question that you have to grapple with today. Are you willing to see Jesus as Lord in your life? Are you willing to see him as the shot caller, as the authority? Do you submit to him? Will you trust God? Those are the questions that we have to wrestle with, because you can come to Sunday celebration for the rest of your life when your legs don't work like they used to before. You know, when you're old, you can come. When you're 70, 80 years old, you can come every single week of your life. But the question is, do you trust God? The question is, will you submit and see him as Lord? That's the question that you have to wrestle with. That's what Zacchaeus is going through as he encounters Jesus. And for us, we believe if you are following Jesus, your life will be transformed. And for some of us, I have to ask, are you willing? Are you willing to have your life transformed? Because you might have a nice life right now. You might have a comfortable life. You got your nice friends. You're living in your nice apartment. You're driving your nice car. Are you willing? Are you willing to trust that God is going to transform? Are you willing to let him transform your life? And for us, transformation is tied to following Christ. If you're following Christ, there's no way you will not be transformed. That's why transformation is the mission of our church. Like we said, our mission statement is to transform lost people into Christ's disciples who will then transform the world. And when we talk about transform, we're not talking about transforming your Google Calendar schedule. The transformation that happens in your life is that you code a life group on Tuesday and Wednesday and you join us for Sunday celebration on Sunday. That's not the transformation we're talking about. Are you willing to be transformed in your beliefs, which leads to transformation of your identity and transformation of your purpose and transformation of your perspective? Are you willing to let God transform your desires and your direction in life? Are you willing to let him transform and change your actions and your lifestyle and your values? Those are the hard questions that we as Christians have to grapple with. You cannot just be the captain of your own ship and slap a Jesus sticker on the side, right? The question is, are you really willing to see him as Lord? You cannot remain unchanged if you are to follow Christ. That's why in 2 Corinthians 5:17 it says this, "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away. Behold, the new has come." And as a church, as this local family of God, we are committed to experiencing this for ourselves, this transformation, and committed to seeing this happen in the people around us. Right? That's why we have discipleship. That's why we gather to study and obey the word. That's why we gather to worship together on Sunday. Not only do we believe in transformation, but we're here so that we can see lost people being transformed. I think for us, we have to remember that we are here for lost people. Like, we didn't start HMCC Detroit so that people who already go to church in Detroit, who are already Christians, can have another option of a church to go to. Like, we're not here to steal other Christians from other churches. That's not what we're here for. We're here for lost people, people who don't know Jesus yet. And in this story, Zacchaeus is pretty ratchet, right? He's like the one who's stealing. He's corrupt. He's obviously evil. But the New Testament shows us so many times that often the people who are lost are religious people, right? People who have been a part of a church community or a religious community their whole life. Those people are also lost because, like I said earlier, you can have your whole life put together on the outside and still be lost. That's what the rich young ruler was like. That's what Paul the Apostle is like when we first encounter him. That's what so many people, Nicodemus, Joseph of Arimathea, these people are religious people, but they're still lost because they don't actually know God in Jesus. And that's, as a church, we're here to see those lives being transformed. Transformed into what? Into Christ's disciples. People who are willing to follow Christ as their Lord and as their Savior. People who are actively trying to be more like him in our character, be more like him in our affections, be more like him in our actions. People who are striving to know, love, and obey him. And the result is that they go out to transform the world. You know, in the story, we don't know what happens to Zacchaeus after this. It's kind of sad. I'm like curious, right? Like, how much did he follow through? Like, what did he do afterwards? Did he quit his job? You know, I don't know. Right? Those are the questions. But we don't know what happens to Zacchaeus. But we do know that other tax collectors who encounter Jesus have their lives transformed and go on to transform the world. The primary example I can think about is Matthew. And, you know, in your Bible, in the New Testament, it begins with Matthew. And that dude was a tax collector. That dude was probably similar to Zacchaeus in many ways. And he, as a tax collector, chooses to leave that and follow Jesus. And we see that later on, he becomes one of the people who writes this account of the gospel. We have the gospel according to Matthew because a tax collector left his job to follow Jesus. That is like a, he has literally changed the world. Writing has imprinted people for thousands of years. Like, God uses messed up, broken people like tax collectors to go on and transform the world. And in our church, we're not writing new gospels, right? But in our church, like, we go and this overflows into our families. It overflows into our workplaces. It overflows into what we do and how we do it. And this mission statement of seeing, transforming lost people into Christ's disciples who are transforming the world, this is for many of us, this is our testimony. For many of us, this is why we're here, part of HMCC Detroit. This is why I'm here. I don't know if y'all know, like, when I came to college, pretty lost. you know, on the outside, I was probably like the skinniest I've ever been. So, you know, doing all right. You know, I was like really into this weird fashion of like, I would have like tight tops and really baggy pants. But, you know, I was like, I thought I was doing all right. I didn't know how lost I was. But I got to college and I did not know who I was, what I was doing. Right? I got to college and really, there were like two things on my mind, girls and money, right? I'm just there to find a girlfriend. I'm just there to get money. That was, you know, when I came into college. And as I got to know Jesus more, life started changing, right? Some tangible things, like I changed majors, right? Like, oh, I was nuclear engineering, changed to industrial engineering. Because I realized, like, nuclear engineering is great, but it's like, I can't go where God tells me to go because it's so specific. You know, if he says, like, go to Detroit, I'm like, what am I going to do for nuclear engineering here? I wouldn't have known, you know? So I was like, man, I got to change my major. I changed my plans. You know, my plan was easy. 5-year master program. Graduate from nuclear engineering, make a crap ton of cash, live comfortably forever. That was my plan, right? But that didn't happen, right? I went to Indonesia for a year to help start a church. I switched majors. I took longer. All of these things started changing. My beliefs about myself and other people started changing, right? All of this pain that I had been holding on to, right, growing up, immigrant family or all these other things, learning how to forgive people, learning how to move on, right, learning how to see, oh, even love people who I used to hate before, who had hurt me. And then I changed. I think you guys know. I used to be really good at making fun of people. Like, I used to destroy people's self-confidence because they're like, I don't know why. Like, I'm just like, I can see generally what people might be insecure about, and then I'll just like dig into them, make sure that they never even think about responding to me. And then somehow along the way, someone challenged me. Maybe you can use that to encourage people. I'm like, wow. I guess so. You know, and then I'm like, oh, maybe I can, instead of when I see people and their insecurity, I can encourage them, right? I started changing. That's why it continued. That's why even after I changed majors, after I got a job, eventually, like, as you're following Jesus, like, oh, man, I felt like even though I love my job, some of you guys know I loved my job. It's great. But I felt like, man, Jesus is calling me this way. I became a pastor and then eventually ended up here. And I'm not saying everyone's life, you know, it's not like every nuclear engineer is going to turn into an IOE. It's not like everyone's going to turn into a pastor, right, if you follow Jesus. But the question and the challenge is really there. Are you willing to let Jesus transform your life? Are you willing to submit and trust him? And are you willing to be a part of us seeking that out together here as a church community? That's what, that idea of transformation is what drives our church. And lastly, that drives our vision, and the transformation drives the vision of our church. I'm going to try to wrap this up quick. Our vision, so what we envision this looking like as we strive for transformation together, is multiplying churches in campuses and cities to transform the next generation among the nations. That's really long, so I'll give you another second to look at it, soak it in. This is what we envision as we strive for our mission together. This is how we see it playing out. Multiplying churches in campuses and cities to transform the next generation among the nations. I'm just going to break it down real quick for us. Multiplying churches. You know, we're not here, like I said, we're not here to steal Christians from other churches. We're also not here just to become the biggest church ever. Like, that's not our goal. Like, we don't want to just be a big, large community here, but we want to be able to multiply church communities wherever God leads us, right? That's what we see happen in the book of Acts. Christians, as they get kicked out, as they move, as they leave, they start starting communities. They start starting these churches. And for us, we believe if we're really about bringing transformation to the world, we got to plant churches because the gospel is the only thing that's really going to address the root of the problem of our sin. And so we believe in multiplying churches. That's why we're here. We're multiplying our church here in Detroit. But even for our future, that's what we envision together. Like, what would it look like for us to send out and plant churches from this church in the future? That's what we are striving and envisioning. In campuses and cities, just plainly because this is where people are. This is where people are. I think many of us know, like, more and more people are living in cities globally around the world. And campuses are such an influential place in our culture and in our countries. Right? This is where people are gathered. This is where the nations are gathered, in cities, in campuses. And that's why we want to multiply churches where the best that we can in these places to get bang for buck, to reach as many people as we can, especially as they gather together to live in these places. And as we multiply churches, what are we focused on? Like we said, transforming the next generation. You know, just to put this out here for this part, for us, I think we always want to lean towards investing in the next generation. Like, next generations are tomorrow's leaders, right? Like, that's why we love investing in college students. That's why we love investing in high school students. Because these are the future leaders. These are the future movers and shakers. These are the future adults and decision makers of tomorrow. Right? These are the next generation of Christians who will carry forth the mission. And that's why for us, we generally always tend to lean towards younger. Because we believe, you know, for us, it is our responsibility to make sure the next generation gets discipled. It is our responsibility. We're not even that old, you know, but it's our responsibility we're entrusted with this next generation to make disciple makers in the next generation. And so we lean towards always younger to transform the next generation. And lastly, we want to do that among the nations. America is great. I love America. Anytime America is playing any other team besides Korea in the Olympics, I'm voting for America. I love this country. I'm so thankful to be here. Like, seriously, right? Life would have been very different being born somewhere else. I love our country. But it's the gospel is not just for our country, right? The same way the gospel was not just for the Jewish people. This is something that the whole world needs to know. So we believe we want to see this multiplication of churches and campuses and cities happening all around the world, right? And so that's our mission. That's our vision. That's how many of us have been influenced by that in our lives. And that's even how, like we said, that's why we started. This is why people left Ann Arbor in 2012 and came here to start stuff. That's why even this past January, we launched together as a church to be this kind of church in the city. And as we close out, I have three questions for us as we consider our next steps. The first question is, am I willing to be transformed by Jesus? And like I said, you really can. You can do all the nice things in the world. You can obey all of the rules that you see in the Bible, and you can still come away not knowing, not trusting, not submitting to God. And God will not have that, right? Like, can you imagine an army commander that allows insubordination? It's not appropriate. Two, even for that group, it is not good when the people under are insubordinate. How much more if God really is perfect, if he really is good, if he really is worthy, how much more so will he not allow insubordination and rebellion? And God is patient. He gives us a lot of time to come around to him, to be willing to submit to him. But this is the question that I think anyone, all of us, have to grapple with. Am I willing to be transformed by Jesus? And I will say, for those of us who have been following Christ for what it seems like has been a while, I want to encourage us to stay willing, to stay committed. You know, like Zacchaeus on day one, I'm sure it was exciting for him. Jesus just came over his house. You know, he was able to meet him face to face. I'm sure it was exciting. But it's hard for the rest of his life being able to submit to Jesus as Lord. Right, it's a little easier when things are like, bam, they're happening, things are changing. But for the long run, let's persevere. Let's persevere in being willing to let Jesus transform our lives. And it takes time. Some things are quick. Some things take a long time. But let's trust God as we submit to him. The second question I have is this the kind of church I want to be a part of? Like I said, this is HMCC's mission and vision. This is what we're about, right? This is why we do what we do and why we do things the way that we do, right? This is why we do it that way. And do you want to be a part of a local church that's committed to that? Now, are you willing to commit to that? Right? These are real questions that you have to wrestle with, right? There are other great local churches that have different focuses, and that's totally fine if you feel called and drawn to that. But if you're going to be here, are you willing to commit to this? Is this the kind of church that you want to be a part of? And lastly, the question is, how can I help someone else experience this? You know, one thing I do like about the tax collectors in the Bible is that generally they throw a good party. And that's what happens, like, when Matthew encounters Jesus, when Zacchaeus encounters Jesus, it always seems like people coming over to their house and they're having a good time, right? They're celebrating, all their tax collector friends come out, you know, and I think there's something to that. Like when Zacchaeus encounters Jesus, he's not begrudgingly, painfully saying, Lord. It says he received him joyfully, and that joy overflows so that he wants other people to experience what he's experiencing. And so that third question is, how can I help someone experience this kind of transformation, this kind of Savior, this kind of God? And so as we think about those questions, I want to invite us to rise as we respond together and close out our time.